Hey, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending upon where in the world you are. This is Eric Rubenstein. I am the Senior Director of Litigation, Fraud, Waste, and Abuse here at Advise Health. And I'm joined today as part of our ongoing series of the OIG Roundtable or the OIG Files. I'm here today again with Matt Kachansky, and I'm here today with Jason Eisengrind. For those of you that know Matt and Jason, you know that these guys spent an entire career working at the OIG. They were part of the senior executive leadership, having worked as agents, assistant special agents in charge, special agents in charge, both retired from the OIG and went on to be the directors of different UPICs. Jason was the director of the Western UPIC, and Matt was the director of the Northeast UPIC. We're super proud to have both of them here as part of the Advise family. These are two guys that I know for a very long time, 25 years or more. And we wanted to spend some time today talking about a recent study that was put out by the OIG, put out by a component known as the Office of Evaluation and Inspections, where it talked about the UPIC's role in combating fraud, waste, and abuse. And I'm going to share that with everybody to take a look and see what we're talking about. For those of you that have not been taking a look at this, it's publicly available. We're happy to send you a copy if you don't have it, but you can simply just go online and you can Google OIG study on the UPICs. And you can see here that the study that was done, they spoke a lot about how benefit integrity is being done on the UPIC level, but really what the challenges are with respect to Medicaid is really where we want to focus our time. So if you have a chance to take a look at that study, I really do encourage you to do it. I want to start, first of all, this conversation with you, Matt. And in the Northeast UPIC, so, you know, I was an agent in New York region, New York, New Jersey, and the Northeast UPIC was my UPIC that I would have to deal with. And so most of the people there were people I knew for a long time. And obviously, when you're working on investigations, a lot of those investigations come out of the UPIC. But the UPIC has a lot of its own responsibilities in not only the Medicare side, but on the Medicaid side. So talk a little bit for the people that are watching this and listening about what some of the UPIC's responsibilities are on the Medicaid side of the house.
Sure. For the Medicaid side, you know, we were responsible, and Jason, you know, you can jump in when you want. You know, we are responsible for the program integrity work, working with each state, their state agency, their representatives of, that were part of their program integrity units within the state agency to try and identify areas of vulnerability within their programs, and then working with the state to decide what ones should we look at, what ones should they look at, how do we want to approach these, should they be audits versus investigations. We have to, you know, we were responsible for throwing out ideas to the states about what types of, you know, projects and data, proactive data projects, should we initiate, and they would approve those and send those back to us or not. And then we would identify specific leads from those projects and then get those approved from the state and then start the, you know, the investigative work with each step along the way, conducting an incredible amount of outreach with each of the states, moving along the path of toward resolution on each individual matter. We also worked with the states in terms of providing them information and data support and clinical support on cases they were investigating through their MFUCUs and through their state agencies. We also worked with the states. We were responsible for negotiating joint operating agreements with each state. Sometimes we were being asked to sign contracts with the states to be able to do work in their specific states. We were also asked to work with each of the MCOs to try to get them to cooperate and provide leads to us and information to us that was not otherwise available. So it's a very complex puzzle in each of the states that we would have to work to try to identify things, investigate or audit them, and then bring them to resolution. And you know, we had 11 states plus the District of Columbia in the Northeast. Each state is completely different. They run different entities. Some states very small. Some states have huge resources to conduct all sorts of things on their own. So we were sort of like second fiddle in terms of work that they would want us to do. You know, we would identify 10 top leads. The state would take the top nine of them and leave us the bottom one to work. So it was, we had to work on these things throughout the history of the relationship with the state.
Now, in the next couple of weeks, we're going to get back together. We're going to bring Wade in for one of our OIG roundtable discussions, and we're going to talk about how a lot of this, a lot of these extracurricular things, we'll call them, have lead to delays in the investigative process and the resolution of the case. But you brought up a few things, and Jason, I want to turn it over to you. You talked a little bit about the data and the fact that state data may be a little bit different than CMS data. Jason, I want to turn it over to you. Talk a little bit about some of the challenges that you saw. So you're at the Western UPIC. You've got, I believe you had 14 or 15 states. Obviously, California was in that mix. So you've got Medi-Cal, which is a humongous program. But talk a little bit about how some of the challenges exist with just the data that you're ingesting and the limits on what that data either holds or doesn't hold, or even how you get access to it.
So the data story in the UPIC West is probably a bit different than the Northeast. And the reason for that is the availability of the Medicaid data. So several years ago, under something called the Medicaid Integrity Contracts, a data set was developed called MCIS. And now, after MCIS didn't really work out very well, the government decided to have transformed MCIS, transform Medicaid state information. So the transformed data had to be certified by CMS. And frankly, the UPIC West started in mid-2018. And at that time, there were literally no states that had approved TMSIS data sets. So everything had to be done manually. We would have to request data sets from individual states. And certainly there are programmatic issues that Matt alluded to, whether they be joint operating agreement for the state would be the norm. But some states, as Matt mentioned, would want to have contracts. So, you know, the use of that data is really important. But right at the root of it, the concern was the quality of the information sufficient for program integrity purposes? And in those early days, and certainly this report is part of those early days because it was capturing 2019 data. So at that time, there were probably maybe a couple of states that had in the UPIC West of 13 states and three Pacific territories that had approved data sets for the UPICs to use. So it was always very manual. The other thing that's really important about selecting that data is getting a handle on whether or not the state would allow for sampling and extrapolation. Some states and territories mm-hmm. do not. And certainly in some segments of services, such as evaluation and management codes, for instance, where the numbers are huge, there'd be no way to perform a universe review, whether it be an investigation or an audit of E&M codes, for instance. It has to really be something like using sampling and extrapolation modes. And as I mentioned, some states do not allow that. So you'd have to identify those requirements up front as well.
So, you know, while we're sticking in that vein in that time period, you know, we're talking about a time period in 2019 where TMSIS didn't really exist. You know, what were your experiences, Jason, when you're having to identify areas of fraud, waste, and abuse on Medicaid data that is limited at best, but also the challenges that you're having operationally in dealing with all of these different states and that like push-pull that exists?
Well, for the company that I was engaged with at the time that had the UPIC West contract and still has it, I'll say that we had a lot of experience because we were the Medicaid integrity contractor for about 10 years, and it was three separate areas that totaled 34 states in the District of Columbia. So we had a lot of subject matter expertise of knowing what the areas of concern are, what the problems are in Medicaid, and we also had a very good program of communicating with the states and territories to identify those areas that they wanted pursued. So it was really just, roll your sleeves up, get into the services, start to do samples of those problematic areas and identify problems and where, those, let's say those smaller samples, in fact, confirmed a vulnerability, then dive deeper into it. But, as I said, since then, the TMSIS program has gotten much better. So it'll be interesting to see at some point if they apply the metrics and the review criteria of this, I think, pretty good effort on the part of the OIG in today's in today's market where data is much more readily available that's suitable for PI purposes. I think it would show a different picture.
Right. Yeah, so I would agree with that.
Absolutely. Yeah, Matt. So I want to turn to you. I've got my screen back up here, where in the report it says the UPIC also conducted only minimal activities related to Medicaid managed care, even though most Medicaid enrollees receive services through managed care. And so, what I think, what they're saying is, well, why aren't you looking at the area where most people are, going? It's like the axiom, why rob a bank? That's because that's where the money is, right? Even though sure. The guy that said it never said that. But, when I was working as a case agent and we would go and want to get Medicaid data, it was always a huge challenge to get that data, because you'd have the encounter data, and then you would have which was not fee for service. That was your managed care, and then you'd have your fee for service data, and then it's kind of like melding that all together. So everybody talks about in the managed care world. I remember when I got hired, and they started talking about Medicare Part C. People would say, well, there's no fraud in Medicare Part C or Medicare Advantage because of these capitated payments. And I think what we've all kind of learned over the years is that the fraud that you commit today in these managed care organizations, that fraud today is going to be identified a year from now or 2 years from now when people are being when their risk adjustments are changing. But from a data perspective, what were some of the things that you like? Essentially, why couldn't you do managed care investigations?
If you go back to some of the things Jason talked about earlier and I talked about earlier, the first is, the structure of the program itself was that the states and CMS really didn't want us to do managed care investigations or audits at that point because there was no way to get them resolved. The contracts between the states and the MCOs were such that there was no way to recoup the monies. So there was no reason to do those types of investigations. So they were pointing us more and more toward fee for service in these early days, and even though it's in some of these states 2%, 5% of the pie, they wanted us to focus on those areas. And then there's also the data, the managed care data available through the state, even when it is available, and sometimes it's not, or was not back then, is again the encounter data. It wasn't the full data. We couldn't do program integrity work based on that encounter data because each of the states was saying it is not accurate to what is finally resolved in the final claim adjustments. And then trying to get the actual claims would be working with each of the individual MCOs, and the states did not want us to do that at that point. Things have changed since then. TMSIS helps us in getting the encounter data, but then we use that as a basis for the PI, the proactive data analysis that we're doing, the projects, and then we still have to work through the state to get to the MCOs to get the actual data.
Well, and the MCO data on the Medicare side was always a challenge as well, because OIG or CMS didn't maintain all of that data. So it was a little bit of a challenge. Similarly, it's like the data in Part D, where you don't really have this kind of real-time data set that comes in. But, Matt, we talked about this a couple of times, was the challenge of that you have to get the state to approve what you're doing. And so, we talk a lot about, we talk about the states. Some states have what are known as OMIGs, Office of Medicaid Inspector General, or in New Jersey, they have what's known as the MFD, the Medicaid Fraud Division. And those are the organizations, or whoever it is, those are the organizations back at the state that you would have to go and have contact with and say, hey, we've got these 10 cases. And you brought it up really briefly, but I do want to talk a little bit more about it, is when you would have 10 cases that you thought were quality cases, and OMIG would go and cherry pick the first nine and then send you the 10. It makes me laugh, because it really was when we were back at the days of working at OI, and we would have a case that we couldn't work, or there was some reason why we couldn't work it, what would we do? We would turn it over to the FBI. We'd say, here, work this. Because, you know, back then, and it's changed, but back then, it was like the Mikey Life cereal commercials, right? Like, give it to someone else who's going to work it. And so to an extent, that also then creates a little bit of a buzz in the way that things are going to be done. Because if nine of the cases that you've done the work for have to go to OMIG to take, there's no credit reporting for that. You're not being told later on, hey, those nine cases we worked resulted in $5 million in savings. And then you, as the UPIC director, can wave a great flag and say, hey, we did some work that resulted in $5 million of savings, because God knows when they're going to get that case resolved. But then you've got the one case that they decide not to take. And I'm guessing that one case was what we would call back in the day, the barking dog, right?
And, sure, it was the runt of the litter, for sure, yeah.
Right. So how are you dealing? So you've got nine cases that you sent over to the OMIG. What do you, ultimately, what happens to those nine cases, or what do you learn happens to them?
Black hole. We don't learn anything. I mean, because they're not on our indices anymore. They're closed for us. So we don't, we're not following up on them. So we really don't know. There's a couple other things that go into that, which is, the states, like a state like New York, mammoth resources. We are free labor to them, because, we're contracted with CMS to do work on behalf of the state. It's really to get the federal share back to Medicare, but to CMS. But, so they see us as free labor, and they'll give us things that they choose. And sometimes it's things that they just don't want to work on. So even the projects and the areas of vulnerability that they're identifying and sending us, they're not the ones that their own people want to work on. So it's not just the ones we're identifying. The ones they're identifying for us are usually not the cream of the crop.
Right.
So what I would like to add to that, though, because I think it relates to the, and I'm just going by memory of what the title of the OI G report was, but basically the UPICs are doing a pretty good job, but there's still challenges, right? So, the fact of the matter is, some really good mitigations to following through on investigations have occurred. So early on, almost at the beginning of the UPIC West adventure, if you will, came about a program of the major case coordination, and that has been now extended to the Medicaid side as well. And I will just say that I think CMS is doing a really good job now of following through on the things that are presented to both OIG, other federal law enforcement, such as the FBI that you mentioned, Eric, but also now on the state side. So whether it's a MFUCU or an OMIG or state Medicaid agency or anything else, it's now being followed through on a regular basis. So I think that there is, again, been advancement since that report, captured that information, but also it's an opportunity to learn from those investigations.
Yeah, and if you look back, this is 2019. You look at the numbers of referrals and things like that; they seem low. That's before the MCC process was in place on the Medicaid side. I think that became in place in 2020, and then it had the pause for the PHE, and they're just now getting back, referring cases in number to the different state agencies and the MFUCUs.
Well, what's interesting to me, as we get ready to wrap up, just a couple of points, here I highlighted the fact that UPICs conducted substantially more program integrity activities for Medicare than Medicaid. I mean, it seems like an obvious, right? I mean, it just seems like an obvious point to make, given the time period of this study, And the fact that most of the data that was available at the time of this study, the UPICs were using was Medicare-related data, and that the TMSIS was just kind of starting to come into play. The MCIS data wasn't really where it should have been. And so it's sort of, you know, you're not doing anything with the MCOs. And so it kind of stands to reason that you were spending more of your time doing Medicare work than Medicaid work.
Well, there are other things at play. So, you know, the access to care. So, Eric, going back up, you know, about 30 years ago or whatever it is to our New York adventure, is that I remember an investigation that was brought up for Mexico, New York, a provider in Mexico, New York. And, you know, the issue is, are there other providers? So, you know, if the vulnerability is not one that compromises people's health or other things that would raise the bar on the need to address it, is it a matter that you want to take out the single provider in a remote area? And that definitely was the situation in the UPIC West, right? You know, there are some fairly remote jurisdictions there.
Well, those are arguments, I think, to be made if you were to treat it instead as a CMPL, civil monetary penalties law, or somewhere in, you know, where there's a potentially someone with a criminal case where they would be excluded and they can get a waiver on exclusion, right? You see those all the time if you're in an underserved area, right? I mean, look, if you're the only urologist in a 500-mile radius, and as a result of this person being prosecuted, everybody's getting bladder cancer, right? You have to make some definitive, you know, kind of decisions. But sort of lending to what you guys have both been speaking about for the few minutes here is the fact here, UPICS reported that problems accessing Medicaid managed care data limited their ability to conduct program integrity activities related to managed care, because TMSIS data was not approved until 2019. So there's at least a recognition of that. Now, we can go on, and in the interest of time, we won't, but you know, there's a whole other discussion to have regarding unified case management, the UCM system, and its successes and its failures, right? The fact that there is a system in place that is a CMS-driven case management system that has you know, some issues with it and has not really been realized to its fullest potential, and has triggered, you know, instances where the UPICs still need to use some legacy systems and things of that. So, you know, I think that all of this is an evolution. And I think that, you know, as we start to do some more of these presentations and some of these roundtables together, I'm hoping that people will start to learn and understand that, you know, some of the shortcomings, we'll call them shortcomings, but some of the things that exist, you know, in the space are not inherently due to the fact that nobody's doing the work, right? I mean, the UPICs can only do so many things in the course of a day. OIG agents only do so many things in the course of a day. So, you know, when we talk again next week, and it's the three of us with Wade, and we really talk about the time issue, you know, some of these things are going to come into play. You know, why does it take so long to do this? But so as a wrap up, Matt, any final thoughts from your read of this report? Anything that stands out that you want to talk about, either good, bad, or indifferent?
Well, I mean, I thought the report was ultimately fair. It brought up those numbers are those numbers, but there are reasons, and very complex reasons, behind some of them. We tried to bring some of those out today. We could talk for hours about how difficult it is, at least in some of the states in the Northeast, on how to get things brought to fruition through the states because of the way the whole system is set up, but that's for another day. But it is a work in progress, and I think with each passing year, I think you'll see those numbers go up, largely because of the data, largely because a lot of the processes are being streamlined, and there's a building of trust between the UPICs and the states as well that's allowing them to work better together.
Right. Jason, any final thoughts from you? You're muted. You have to unmute.
Sorry about that. Thank you. I'm sure that Matt has summed it up really well. Obviously, Medicaid is a really important program. And frankly, in years gone by, Medicaid was not a focus of attention by the federal government, ability to mitigate fraud and abuse in it. and the Deficit Reduction Act of 2006 really kind of opened up that can of worms, as us New Yorkers like to say.
Yeah. Well, this was great. So thanks very much for taking the time out of your day. You know, we're very busy here at Advise as always. So it's great when I get an opportunity to pick the brains of two of my favorite people from the OIG. So again, thanks very much for tuning in. If you'd like to get some more information about what we talked about, other information about Advise in general, feel free to reach us at hello@advise, A-D-V-I-Z-E, health.com. And we'll answer your questions as soon as we can. In the meantime, thanks very much, and we'll see you at the next show.
Thank you all.